Previously.tv Podcast Network.
You want to tell me what this is all about?
If all goes well, I'll find out what I need to know.
And what if all doesn't go well?
Say you knew me when.
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This, Beverly Hills 90210 edition. Today's episode is Season 3, Episode 22, The Child is Father to the Man, which, by the way, is my absolute favorite Kate Bush song. Now, here are your hosts, Tara Ariano and Sarah D. Bunting.
Hi, Sarah.
Hello.
I just want to note here that some people might hear Season 3, Episode 22 and think this is a season finale. Oh, my, no. There are still two more whole discs of Season 3. I can't fucking believe it.
Weather update. The wind knocked out internet just seconds after we recorded our first
really
episode.
Really seconds
So
after.
Even though our internet is blinking off and on so far, Time Warner Cable and the Pacific Weather Systems have been very, very cooperative.
They must be fans.
Yeah.
All right, let's get through this as fast as we can before the internet decides to crap out again. And also because it's not a good episode.
It's so fucking bad.
It's so bad. All right, so there's really only one storyline. Everything kind of braids into it. So we'll go in basically chronological order. And our one and only story is Dylan's pain. That actually hurt my throat. That was a bad idea. All right.
And it's our pain as well.
Excuse me.
A throbbing pain in the asshole region.
Indeed. So, the fact that we open on a black and white clip montage of the end of the last episode, in which, as you'll recall, Jack blew up, is our first warning that this one is going to be really arty in a very ill-advised way.
Yes, this is Luke Perry's whatever.
God. Yes.
Answered prayer for, like, I want to do something really different.
I want to show how much I can stretch. You can't. Dylan wakes up sweating and then sees himself in a BH baseball cap at the foot of the bed, and he says this to himself in clip number two.
We're going to be dreaming about this for the rest of our lives. You might as well get used to it. Except it's not just a dream. It's a nightmare. It's our nightmare.
Uh-huh.
Jack's dead. We might as well be.
Agreed!
We wish!
So why are you still talking?
So, the idea of, like, a character talking to a different version of himself is, like, not especially new, but, like, the fact that they're both Luke Perry, like, that one isn't a kid, is, like, so stupid and so narcissistic. God, it's so stupid.
And the fact that, I mean, the only thing that works even a little bit about it is that his, like, snotty dickery is directed at himself.
Yes.
In both directions.
Yes.
But then it's still his snotty dickery, and it's not well written, it's not well acted, even the hat is not good.
No, it's too
big. Why is your inner child fucking eating grapes? What is that?
There's so many questions. Oh, it's terrible.
And I don't care about the answers to any of them.
No, and, like, you just spend the whole episode waiting for it to, like, be punctured, and it takes so long. It takes the whole
and
episode, basically.
And that kid...
Oh, God.
I wrote his name down somewhere. He has two acting credits on the IMDb.
Ooh.
This is the last one.
Yeah, I'll
Thank
say.
God.
So, at the Peach Pit, David has his pissy stress voice on as he discusses with Steve the inconvenience of Dylan's father's literal fiery death in clip number three.
How am I supposed to be in two places at one time? It's humanly impossible. Of all the days to schedule my first recording session.
You know, you tell me about your career as if I care.
I don't. So what am I supposed to tell them? Icon Records is never going to understand why I can't be there tomorrow.
2 weeks ago, I would have been happy to intercede on your behalf. But since you saw me down the river, David, why don't you make like a tree and leave?
Okay, bruiser. What is with that 50s line?
And yeah, not. And also, didn't they make up?
Yeah, exactly. Like, David obviously remembers, or he wouldn't be asking Steve about this, but Steve has forgotten for reasons unknown. I don't get it.
Also, is this the Indian wedding version of a funeral? Just go, shake his hand, and leave. It's a funeral.
Yeah. Well, he tries to make this argument to Donna later, like, Dylan doesn't care if I'm there or not. And by the way, it's true. He doesn't. So I don't know why Donna gives him so much guff. But anyway, from the counter, Nat, Brandon, and Andrea watch a news report that's being filmed on Dylan's front lawn. Neither Andrea nor Steve has called Dylan, they admit, because they didn't know what to say. And maybe they should have, because inside, Dylan is kind of cracking up and getting needled by his Dylaner child in clip number 4.
Hey, Dylan. You didn't think you were going to get rid of me that easy, did you?
Lady, I'm trying to reach Iris McKay. McKay. M-C-K-A-Y. Just hang up already, will you? What are you crying to Mama for, huh? I mean, what does she ever do for us? Excuse me?
Did you get a hold of your mom yet?
You know where she's at, ma'am? The woman is off in woo-woo land searching for the meaning of life.
Don, are you okay?
Heck. Can I leave a message with you?
Yeah. Tell her Jack McKay got blown to bits in Venice, California, and Dylan thought she might just want to know.
Tell her that Dylan called. Aloha.
Still no luck, huh?
None at all. Come on, man, let's bail. Come on, let's go. While we got the chance, we could be the bar in 2 hours.
Stop eating grapes!
Although it is convenient for our purposes because it lets you know which one of them is which. So we're just hearing them and not seeing which one is in the sweatshirt and dumb baseball cap.
Yeah, true. Also, Kelly, he's probably not okay.
Yeah.
They're picking his dad up with a Roomba. His mom is nowhere. He's 42 years old. And his inner child is eating all his fucking fruit. No, he's probably not okay. She is the second worst in this episode. Ugh.
Yeah, she's really useless. Anyway, someone knocks on the door and Dylan screams at whoever it is like a crazy person while Dylaner child gets all cynical about news vultures or whatever the fuck. And Dylan takes off and leaves Kelly to deal with it, so it's lucky for Dylan that it's Jim. And in his room, Dylan is packing when Jim enters to offer his condolences and a brief arm pat. Dylan knows that he can't stay in his house, which is why Jim is there. He's come to take Dylan back to stay at the Walsh's for a while. Dylan thinks Brenda would be against that, but it turns out to have been her idea. And when Kelly hears this, she is crestfallen, because now's the time, Kelly, to get all jealous and possessive. Whatever. As soon as Dylan and Jim step outside, they're swarmed by reporters. Jim, by the way, also drives a dad car adorably, and reporters aren't the only ones camped outside as we see Captain Terry's first mate around the corner on his car phone with cord in clip number 5.
So what do you propose we do, genius? Kidnap the kid in front of the eyewitness news team? Yeah, well, you guys blew this, not me. So either we do it my way or you find yourself another cowboy.
Ooh.
Yeah, nice. Like, that was like an action movie Mad Lib. What?
Another cowboy. Oh, boy. My mother had a car phone with a cord, by the way. So this really took me back. At the Walsh's, Brenda anxiously looks out the window and then pulls down the cuffs of her grandpa sweater again, like quit indicating Shannon. Brandon offers ice cream, which she declines. He tells her it's nice of her to let Dylan stay there. She's scared. Brandon confidently says Dylan is scared too. And then Jim and Dylan are there, except that Jim enters alone because Dylan's looking at the backyard. Jim says this in this such a quizzical, like he's looking at the backyard. What the fuck is
this
kid?
He's reminiscing about that time he threw a full bottle of my scotch at the back wall.
Probably
licking the spot. Dickhead.
Yeah. Brandon remembers that he's Dylan's friend for a minute and comes out to talk to him. They've, by the way, for this whole episode, they've paled up Luke Perry to make him look emotionally wrecked, but more haggard is not a good strategy. No. With this particular actor in this role.
No.
He looks like hell, which I know is the point, but like really looks like hell. Brandon does an okay job of acting normal. Dylan, of course, still has his melodrama cranked up to Jesus in clip number 6.
You know what I love about your backyard, man?
What?
Who cares?
Looks the same today. You know, I mean, the same as it did yesterday. The day before that, and the day before that.
Well, you know us Walshers, boring and predictable.
All except one.
Dick.
Fuck you. Are you guys gonna come inside? It's pretty cold out here.
Yeah, we knew who
it
he
sure
meant,
is. So. He's not grieving enough not to talk shit about you, who he fucking cheated on. God, he's fucking terrible. Stay on the roof, asshole. Take some grapes.
It is in his tiny defense. I didn't think that he was saying that as a diss. I thought being unpredictable was something that he liked about Brenda, but, you know, your mileage may vary. So inside, while Brandon sets up the cot in his room, Brenda and Brandon try to relate to Dylan by talking about the only other person they ever knew who died, the famous Aunt Sheila. They didn't want to go to her funeral either, but they both say they felt better afterwards. Dylan is not interested in their advice in clip number 7.
So what, I'm supposed to go have a good cry with the press breathing down my neck?
Hey, they won't show up to the memorial services, I promise you that.
Yeah, we won't let them.
What difference does it make if I go or not? You guys, Jack's gone.
Dylan, he's still here. Just like Aunt Sheila's still here.
Oh, what, Brandon's spirit?
Yes.
I don't believe in that junk. When your number's up, your number's up. Jack took a hit, and that's it.
Well, you don't have to decide right now. I mean, maybe you'll feel differently after you sleep on it.
Look, Brandon, I want to thank you for letting me stay.
Dylan, you don't have to say anything.
You really don't.
I want to apologize to you. I'm sorry it took me a whole day to swallow my pride and do the right thing.
I think you need another pillow. I'm just going to go in the hall and get it.
You know it's going to be okay.
Just keep telling me that way.
This is such a stupid thing to nitpick about in this generally really terrible episode, but please go to the visual aids for the gif I made of Luke Perry and Jason Priestley, the worst bedmakers in the world. Both, like, one of them picks up the quilt, the other one has like no idea what to do, they're just like flapping it around. It's clear neither of them has ever made a bed in their fucking lives.
Also, get fitted sheets. Come on. Oh, you spent all your money on grapes?
Well, Cindy didn't. They're her sheets. She presumably has a proper set anyway.
I'm sure she does. She got them at the farmer's market.
No doubt. Donna. So at her house, Kelly tells Donna how useless she felt at Dylan's. Donna says that he is probably still in shock, but Kelly is pretty sure she's just not as sensitive as the Walshes are. And then David comes in to say that dinner is ready and informs Donna when she asks that it's meatloaf and mashed potatoes, which, by the way, I could eat some of those right now.
Me so too.
Kelly is grossed out because she has an eating disorder. And then Serge Benkin calls for David, who did not reschedule his recording session, apparently. Kelly says she's going to skip dinner, but this time her convenient excuse is not that she has an eating disorder, but that she's upset. Speaking of people's self-destructive habits, Dylan walks in on Brandon yelling at some basketball game his team is losing. He evasively says that he's even for the season, maybe a little down, but he expects to get ahead with the games the next day. Sounds like a solid plan. Great job, killer. Dylan lies back down on the bed, seemingly to relax since he's in jeans. But Brandon, for some reason, takes that as a sign that he's going to sleep in jeans and turns the light off in the room. Nice hosting, Brandon. Later, Dylan comes downstairs in his jeans and finds Dylan, her child, at the liquor cabinet, predictably goading him about drinking in clip number 8.
Where are you going? You gonna go call your sponsor?
Pilgrim?
So I can tell you that he understands how you feel. Would you rather wake up Jim and Cindy so they can tell you you've been like a son to them? Quit torturing yourself, man. What do you want, Dylan? You wanna hate him so you won't miss him? That's not gonna work. Because you just remembered the other day. Put his arm around you and just for that second it felt like somebody loved you. It's a lose-lose situation, you know? I mean, it's a classic case. We're going down. What's it gonna be? Stone cold sober. Feeling no pain.
Feeling no pain. What is with the John Wayne line readings?
I don't know.
You gonna go call your sponsor?
He's from Ohio. Like, I have so no idea weird. What this accent even is. Anyway, then this phantom of Dylan's imagination hands a bottle to him. I'm like, can we just figure out what the rules are of what is happening here? Because I don't, anyway, whatever.
And then there's a whole lot of acting as Luke Perry rolls his eyes way up in his giant forehead and starts guzzling the room temperature iced tea that's in the bottle. So annoying and also so envy-inducing. This is like 11 in the morning. I was like, this episode is terrible. That looks good. Maybe just a bottle of holdover Holt and a crazy straw. Who's going to know?
Yeah, you can see that in the visual aids. It's glorious / horrendous. Then it's the morning of the funeral.
Glorendous.
Brenda's suit really needs some discussion. You can see it in the visual aids, of course, but it's like a black pinstriped suit with like a, you know, a button up to the neck, white blouse. The cuffs are like ruffled out way far beyond where her the cuffs of her jacket are, and her skirt is a shirt. It's like barely
nobody on the show knows how to dress for a funeral.
No, Cindy is in
except
like
Donna
aquamarine. Yeah, it's really bad. See it in the visual aids. All the reporters have left, but the story is on the front page of the paper again, this time with Dylan's picture, and there is this exchange, clip number 9.
Why can't they just leave him alone?
Well, it's a valid news story, Bren.
Shut up!
Both of you shut up. Like, see also Brenda being like, we won't let him. Like, okay, gallant. You just tell those big old news meanies to fuck off. Although apparently it is actually that easy, as we will see at the end. But I don't want to spoil it.
True. Yeah, I don't know where Brandon gets off lecturing Brenda about what is or is not a valid news story when, as was established in the last episode, he does not read the paper, so stow it sideways. Anyway, one story is about the FBI looking into Jack's mob ties. Brenda doesn't want anyone to let Dylan see the paper. Meanwhile, at the Taylor manse, Donna has come to get Kelly for the, I put in my notes, funeral, but she is not even dressed yet, and since this is one of the episodes where Donna is competent and mature, she can't with either of the teenagers in this house in clip number 10.
I'm sick, Donna. I really don't feel good. Kelly, I don't. I have stomach cramps.
So take an aspirin. The service starts in half an hour.
Donna, I tried saving you the trip over here, but you had already left.
Why? What's the matter?
Nothing. Just we have to take separate cars because I'm going straight to the recording session afterwards.
But Brandon says we have to go over to the Walsh's afterwards to pay our condolences.
Now that is something I'm definitely not doing.
Why not? You plan on having a stomach ache all day?
Well, don't you think it'd be kind of awkward for Kelly to go over there with Brenda not even talking to her?
Funerals are awkward for everybody. I mean, aren't you and Dylan supposed to be going out? Don't you think he needs you there today? And well, I don't understand why you didn't just tell Serge Menken that today isn't a good day for you to cut a record.
Donna, I can't start making demands before I've proven myself.
Well, what's Dylan gonna think?
Well, if he thinks about me at all, which I highly doubt, maybe he'll appreciate me leaving him alone.
You know, I am really disappointed in you. In both of you. All right. I'm coming. I just don't know what to wear.
I mean, something close to what Donna's wearing, maybe. But, like, I just love how Donna's like, fuck both of you.
Yeah, like, their funerals. It's awkward. Get in the fucking car.
Yeah, no one wants to go. That's not what this is about. Anyway, at the Walsh's, Dylan is tying his tie in the kids' bathroom and falling apart. Brenda comes in to get him and sees him all weepy, which is her favorite flavor of Dylan. She gives him permission to skip the tie if he wants. Her ruffly cuffs. God, really bad.
Then she hands him a planter and he smashes it.
Dylan decides that on the way out the door to his exploded dad's funeral is the perfect time for a conversation about their relationship, and that's what they have in clip 11.
Threw away all my stuff. I took down all the pictures.
No, they're just packed away in a box in the garage.
Out of sight, out of mind.
If only.
And you've never been out of my mind.
Brown, if this hadn't happened, I wouldn't be welcome here.
Dylan, you and Kelly hurt me pretty badly. But it's nothing compared to what you're going through. And in the grand scheme of things, you'll look back years from now and I'll just be a girl you knew in high school.
No, you won't. No, you won't, Brad. Not after everything.
It's nice to know.
Oh, these two.
Is it?
With the drama. Oh, my God. The drama. Then Dylan decides to wear his tie after all, which I guess means he's all fixed. Nope. At the funeral home, he's all alone, staring at the urn like a psycho. Sarah cut a shot of it. It's just like the urn in the foreground and then like some plants and Dylan glaring from like across the room. That also made a gif of like a shot of the urn and then a shot of Dylan. So it looks like the urn is staring back at him. It made me laugh while I made it. Anyway, there are the visual aids. Dylan, her child,
I was considering doing a two shot and the like putting pie over the urn, like in very teeny letters, like, ew. Hello.
Dylan, her child, is also there. He has to be gross about the fact that they don't even know what's actually in the urn, Jack or pieces of the car, which, like, probably both. Jim comes in to get Dylan and say that they asked if Dylan wanted to say a few words. It seems like something that would have come up before now, but okay. Meanwhile, in the actual chapel, there's an extra who looks like the love child of Ricky Lindholm and Mia Wasikowska. So check out that extra in the visual aids. Christine is holding it together a lot better than Dylan. And Donna must be mortified that she's coming in late with Kelly and David after all their bullshit. Kelly gets all tense about the fact that Dylan is sitting with Brenda, like, maybe arrive on time if that's important to you, Kelly. They sit in the same aisle as the car phone first mate. Brandon, by the way, has his arm over the end of the pew like he's in a fucking diner booth. And the officiant speech is actually kind of rude about Jack, so it's not so bad when Dylan or child interrupts. So that's in clip number 12.
What can you say about a man who had everything and lost it? About a man who may not have realized what he had.
Dead.
Was he blind?
What is he going to say? Huh? Is he going to say that he was a wise man, that he was a kind man, that he had ideas, vision? What are you going to tell him? Are you going to tell him what a great father he was? Devoted husband, model citizen. May the
Lord rest. We get it.
Tell them that they killed him, but he didn't really deserve to die? Come on.
Dylan, how do you feel? Do you want to say anything?
Huh? Because the truth is, they whacked him because he was a bad guy. So if you want to share that with all these people here, then you be my guest.
No. I don't.
Oh my God. The acting.
Everybody's
acting!
Really acting their hardest, but I'm actually concerned that Luke Perry might have pulled something making this episode. So after the service, the gang is loitering in a lounge waiting for Dylan to show himself. David is visibly itching to get out of there and begs Donna to say goodbye for him, but she is a decent human and refuses to do that. In the back of the room, Christine and Kelly embrace and say this, clip 13.
Well, I guess this is goodbye for us too.
Okay. It's not like
it's
Christine.
It's not camp.
She still lives in town.
I'm just
going to
grab my grapes and hit the road.
Have lunch with her sometime. Like, just because her boyfriend, who was your common connection, died, doesn't mean it's the end of your acquaintanceship. Whatever.
Ugh. Jesus.
Christine says she's going to the Walsh's afterward, but Kelly says she's going to skip it. And before she can explain why, Brenda comes over to make sure that Christine knows where she's going and to let Kelly specifically know that Brenda wants her to come too. Jim comes in to loudly tell everyone that Dylan will be right out. Supposedly he had to go to the shitter. I'm paraphrasing. And then car phone first mate finds Dylan in the hall. Seems like he's about to menace him when some nerd shows up behind him and car phone pivots to offer his condolences instead. But then Cardphone follows Dylan into the can and say that this is what happens. Clip 14.
You're going to get a phone call at your friend's house in 2 hours from some people who need to speak with you.
What are you talking about?
They just want to pay their respects. Be smart and do what they tell you.
Hey, Dylan. Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to bother you.
Don't worry, son. These things have a way of working themselves out.
Aminous.
This is also the scene, like, the scene right after this is the one that I referred to in a tweet last week as it looking like two buildings fucking. The shoulder pads on Dylan and David are enormo, even for this show in the 90s.
They're in the visual aids. They are both like 3 feet wide. Dylan goes back out to the hall, but Carphone is gone. Maybe he's a ghost. Then the reception at the Walsh's is breaking up with reporters still out on the lawn. Brandon and Steve come out to see if Dylan will shoot hoops with them. He will not, but Jim says he will try to change his mind. Meanwhile, Brenda tells Brandon she's worried about Dylan. Brandon, the idiot who doesn't read the paper, says she can't expect him to be the life of the party, but she's not an idiot, and that's not what she means in clip 15.
But the article in the paper made it sound like he might be the next target.
And that's why we decided not to discuss it with him, remember?
Brandon, from the way he's talking, something tells me he already knows.
Also, is there no adult in his life that, if he is possibly going to be a target of some kind of hit, would put him in touch with some kind of authority that would protect him? Whatever.
Which I guess they did. Like, I really don't understand how any of this works, and what we're about to see is not going to clarify it, but
not. Elsewhere, Kelly is eating chips one tiny bite at a time because she has an eating disorder, and being insecure in clip 16.
These chips are so salty. Why don't you stop eating them?
I can't. I'm so nervous.
What are you nervous about?
This house. Dylan and Brenda under the same roof together.
Oh, please. Come on.
I can't help it. I mean, it's like I'm paralyzed. I don't even know what to say to him. I feel like he's totally ignoring me.
Well, that's because you're acting really weird.
Thank you. Look.
Again, Donna, voice of reason.
Yeah, like, stop being a selfish asshole, eat a carb.
Yeah.
And just go be there for him. Ugh, whatever.
Mm-hmm. Also, why isn't Kelly's mother there? I mean, I know she has a baby, but, like, she should be directing Kelly into how to act right, since no one has, apparently. Anyway, Dylan is moping next to Cindy and Andrea on the couch. They make small talk about gardening, and Deliner Child fondles the scotch. Please see it in the visual aids. I'm very proud of the gif I made. It's ridiculous. In Curtis Bray's office, David is antsy waiting for his turn in the studio, but it's going to be a while. And yes, Curtis Bray, we see you rubbing your nose. Made a gif of that, too. Curtis makes a you got somewhere to be joke, and David tells him that he actually kind of does in clip 17.
My friend's father, he just got he
Bored
died
up good.
And they're having a reception right now.
Oh, David,
why didn't you say anything to us? Serge booked the space, we have people coming in.
I know, it was just sort of a last minute death. I mean,
David, a word to the wise, you want a career in this business, you got to get a creative synergy going. You know, that's a give and take kind of thing. I hip, you hop. You be, I bop. You know what I'm saying?
Not really.
Don't worry. You will.
I've been using that line on the Cats ever since watching this episode.
I be, you
I
bop.
Hip, you hop. Pearl bees, you pop.
I'm still not clear from this exchange whether David telling them about the funeral would have gotten him out of this obligation or not, so I guess we still have to work on that creative synergy, because what? Anyway, back at the Walsh's, Dylan is standing by stiffly while others try to distract themselves with basketball. Dylan ends up with the ball, and though he's caught off guard, he shoots a three-pointer and smiles for a fraction of a second, and Dylan and your child is all over him in clip 18.
You know they're not your friends, don't you? Brandon, he's the one they love.
Doubtful.
Oh, and like you and Donna Martin have anything in common. Except Kelly. Sure, she's good looking. But you know it's only a matter of time before she burns you too.
Kind of true. It's going to take another season and a half, but Deliner Child.
It'll happen.
Not wrong. Steve passes Dylan the ball, but fun time is over for Dylan. He wanders over to another part of the yard where he can be alone, yet be seen to be moping by everyone, and Kelly follows. They have this exchange in clip 19.
It's kind of weird being here, don't you think?
It's all relative. It was weird being in that limo with Jack. It was weird at the hotel. It was weird on that boat. My whole life's been weird.
Well, I really liked Jack, even though I didn't know him that well.
Kelly, you knew him nearly as well as I did.
And I didn't believe anything that they wrote in that article today.
Oh, Jesus.
The one in the newspaper.
Hey, Brandon, you got today's newspaper? No, I think I threw it away. So what did it say, this article? He's a mobster, or just a liar and a cheat?
Dylan, I'm sorry.
Why? Did you write it?
Reese's maybe an even bigger cunt than usual guitar legs.
The bass guitar of accusation.
Oh my God.
God. Did you write it? Grow up. I know your dad just died.
Did a lot of parents read it? Asshole.
Dylan then finds himself alone in the house with the fully stocked bar cart and Dylan, her child, trying to lure him to it. Dylan's about to take a drink when David returns all chirpy. And we hear that in clip 20.
Hey, what's up, Dylan?
Oh, not now, goofball. Listen, everybody's out back, David. I'll be there in a minute.
So what are you doing, man?
About to get drunk. You want to join us? Hey, didn't you have something that you had to do?
Yeah, well, I got him to postpone the session because my head wasn't really into it.
Well, I hope you didn't do that on my account. Especially since you and I have nothing to say to one another.
Listen, we've never really been too close.
Here it comes. I've always liked you. I've always respected you.
And I guess the fact is, you just don't really like me too much.
David, the fact is I don't really know you that well.
Translation?
Well, that's just it. I suddenly
correct.
Feel like I know you more than anybody.
Would you get rid of this yet? Huh?
Listen, man, it wasn't my father. But I was in the room when Scott accidentally blew himself away. And I know how I felt afterwards. It's like a bad nightmare you can't really wake up from. You can't do anything to get him back. I want to run away and get high or something, but the problem is, you can't run away from what's in your head.
I know. You want to go outside, get some air?
Finally, Dylan is seen!
What is with the, like, do you want to get rid of this yutz? Like, yutz now?
Yeah. I also like, not now, goofball!
Space!
After this exchange, Dylan, her child, is shamed by David's, I don't know, sensitivity or whatever. And when Dylan turns around before leaving the room, Dylan, her child, is gone. This opens the door for Cindy to push food on Dylan, who seems like he's about to calm down. But then the phone rings. It's Dylan's, quote, Uncle Frank, unquote. And Kelly comes in the back door as Dylan is mid-conversation in clip 21.
Are you threatening me? Is that what this is about? All right, look, I'll be there. Yeah, you got to be more specific.
Dylan, look.
Kelly, is Brandon still outside?
Yes.
Thanks.
Dylan, wait a minute. I need to talk to you. Look, I'm really bad at this. Nothing I say is coming out right, so maybe I should just go.
Do what you gotta do.
I was hoping you said you'd come with me.
Kelly, I can't. All right? Oh, God. I'll call you later.
Ew.
Yeah.
Don't bother. Fuck her.
Seriously. Also, Dylan can't leave the reception for his dad's funeral, Kelly. Have some fucking sense. Where's Donna to tell her how to be?
Ugh.
Anyway, he is about to leave his father's reception. Anyway, outside, Dylan grabs Brandon, telling him he needs a favor. And then Brandon comes out the front door. All the reporters make like they're going to swarm him until they see he's a nobody. Good call, reporters. Around the corner, Dylan and his fucking dumb cowboy duster, which Sarah, thank God, has put together in a front and back shot. I can't, by the way, every time I see a duster, I'm reminded of our friend Kim of the Kim Challenge, talking about how Jim, her husband, when they first met, used to wear a duster like that, and then getting him to stop was like one of the first projects of her relationship.
I remember that.
Very important. Good job, Kim. Anyway, this duster and Dylan have snuck past all of the reporters, and he's waiting for Brandon to come and give him his car. Dylan is douchefully mysterious, as we heard up top, and won't even give Brandon a cover story to explain his absence, which is not considerate. And then Dylan is driving Brandon's car to East LA, I guess. He parks. Dylan, her child, is nervous. Dylan finally yells at him to shut up, and he almost does, but he still wants to go to Baja. He still just doesn't want to die. And then Dylan's making his way into the crowd at a Mexican open-air mall that I think is maybe actually the farmer's market at what is now the Grove. If someone who lives in Los Angeles and did live there in the 90s can report on what this place is, because it's not like a street fair. Anyway, he sees a couple of little boys in baseball uniforms run up to greet their dad. Get it, remember? Because the song. And then some dude is tapping Dylan on the shoulder, saying he's glad that Dylan could make it, telling Dylan to follow him. Dylan is reluctant, but then the guy shows him a badge. And the agent leads Dylan to a back room or something, and there's Carphone, who tells him this conversation is not taking place. Dylan thinks they want to talk to him about Jack's mob ties, but that's what they talk about in clip 22.
No, Dylan. That's not it.
What, they drug you down here too?
Not exactly. I work with these guys. So did your father.
When your dad agreed to cooperate with us, he had only one condition, that if anything happened to him, you should at least be told that he was on the right side.
I don't get it at all. I mean, what, he got out of prison early so he could help you people set up a sting operation, acting as the bait to lure some crime boss to the boat.
That was the plan.
Well, my question is, while you geniuses were supposed to be watching his every move, how did they get the bomb under his car? I mean, this is sick. He went undercover for you people. He spilled his guts out. And you were so busy covering your ass that you let your star witness fall through the cracks and it cost him his life.
All right.
Seriously.
Not now, goofball. Okay.
But this is an ongoing investigation. There's a lot of people out on a limb here. And the only reason you're getting this information, which you're not getting, remember, is because your father cut a deal.
Okay.
I mean, I will begin by saying that, like, look who's an expert on who screwed up after knowing about this situation for 7 seconds.
Seriously.
When I have no goddamn idea what they're even talking about. Like, who was actually in on the deal?
Right.
What?
Yeah, it's really stupid. And, fortunately, it doesn't really last past this episode, at least in this season. It does come up again, spoiler alert. But the revelation that Christine works with these guys has Dylan asking to speak to her alone so that he can ask whether the engagement was part of the game. She says it wasn't. She was going to resign so that she could marry Jack. Dylan rudely says that now she doesn't have to resign, and she says she does have to find a way to go on without Jack, just like Dylan does. And in the car, Dylinner Child is spinning out in clip 23.
You don't really believe that fairy tale about Jack being a big unsung hero, do you?
I'm not going to sit here talking to myself.
Yeah, that's just it. You're not going to be talking to anybody when the guy who put the bomb under Jack's car comes to our house. Do you really trust those goons to protect us? Oh, yeah, hey, turn the volume. That's fine with me, but I'm not going to shut up if you go to a liquor store and we get plastered. No! I don't want to hear it! This is not the Bellage Hotel. It's not Rio or Paris. I'm not 13 years old anymore. I'll be damned if I'm going to listen to a broken record for the rest of my life. Okay, here it comes once and for all right? We are going to get through this and I do not want to drink.
I mean, he clearly does want to drink, but he's not going to. That's a different thing.
Well, and he already did, so who cares?
Yeah, true. So Dylan...
No, your father died. Tumble off the wagon. I'm fine with it.
Yeah. I mean, there's
not how it works. I'm aware. Don't email me. I'm aware.
Dylan then turns to Dylinner Child, and now it actually is a kid. Fucking finally. He looks terrified, maybe, of what his future is going to be like if Dylan's haggard visage is anything to go by. And then Dylan's returning to the Walsh house after dark. The reporters are still there, and since Dylan slows down enough, one puts a mic in his face to engage him just as Jim comes out to supervise in clip 24.
Dylan, we understand there was bad blood between you and your father. What kind of man was he, and how will you remember him?
I'm glad you asked me that. I had a chance to talk about him today at his funeral, and I didn't. So, when you write about the notorious Jack McKay, you write this. He is survived by his only son, who loved him very much. We'll miss him very much.
Thanks, Dylan.
The reporter's so disgusted. Like, yeah, we'll be sure to print that. That's a great story.
And then they just leave, like, in despair. They're just like, this fucking guy. And they all just leave the Walsh house, I guess, because it's that easy.
Yep.
Dylan gave you the quote, singular.
Mm-hmm. And that's the end.
Wrap it up.
Dylan tells Jim that he took a drive to clear his head and that it helped. And they have this exchange in our final clip.
Sort of flashing back to the summer a long time ago at the beach where... taught me how to body surf.
In his white swim trunks.
I'd forgotten all that.
One summer? That's a lot of dadding.
How much he loved you.
Yeah, whatever. Anyway, in the kitchen, Brenda's finally having ice cream and feeds Dylan a mouthful. Brandon checks that he found what he was looking for, and Dylan says he did, but doesn't elaborate. And then Kelly
or thank him for letting him use the car, does he?
I think he says thanks when he hands the keys over, but not in a very sincere way. And then Kelly is sleeping when her phone rings. It's Dylan and a boom mic calling. See that in the visual aids, bobbing up and down. Dylan says he wanted to hear her voice. Then we look at Dylan through a shot of liquor bottles, which he walks past, to the urn, which he lays a ceremonial hand on. Behind him, little Dylan is sitting on the stairs sobbing, not convincingly, but I guess he feels better when Dylan ambles over and gives him a fucking hug. It's so dumb, but now it's over, so let us wrap it up and move on to other storylines. I don't even remember what's next. It can't be worse than this. Episode MVP. Donna.
Yes, absolutely. No set of dress and scream at her friends for being douches.
Yep, agreed. Least valuable player. Dylan?
Yeah, Dylan.
He's really...
Dylan or Child, I think.
I mean, Dylan or Child is making some good points. I have to say, Dylan is the one who's making everyone feel awkward around him. But
well, yeah, but Dylan or Child could have said it with flowers and not wasted our time with this so-called acting showcase episode that sucked.
Yeah, if you watch this episode, and I don't necessarily recommend it, you really have to like just get watch it through the lens of Luke Perry thinking this is my Emmy reel the whole time, because you know he did. It might have been his Emmy reel. He did not get an Emmy this year.
No. Or any other time.
No. Although, he might get a chance when he plays Archie Andrews' dad in the Riverdale show on the CW. Hilaire. The Kim Challenge.
Bad, and dangerous to me.
Five ways in this episode that Dylan proves he is mad, bad, and or dangerous to know. Well, he drinks and he's alcoholic. That's bad and dangerous.
If you're an urn, you're going to be like atomized by his glare.
He doesn't tell a trusted adult about some pretty shady business that he's fairly sure may end in him getting killed. So that's, you know, dangerous and also bad.
He could get himself shot in the face by a federal agent who's sick of him mouthing off about operations about which he knows nothing.
And he's mad at every person that crosses his path, although, you know, some of them kind of deserve it, Kelly.
Yeah.
That makes five.
Why should I take a back seat? Because I'm a girl?
You shouldn't. It's our excerpt from the I Hate Brenda book, Shannon Doherty Exposed. So this is more about Uncle Velvet.
Oh, God. Ew.
And an event where I'll just read it. So when Shannon, found out that Eddie Vedder was staying at the same hotel, she used an alias to call the front desk and said, "Oh, can you tell me what room he's staying in? He's a friend of mine and we're supposed to party together tomorrow night." Of course, when Eddie was asked about this, he said this wasn't the case, that he wasn't friends with her and had no intention of partying with her. Later, when she attempted to telephone his room, and she was told by the operator that he wasn't taking any calls. "Oh, he'll take mine," she cooed. He didn't. She approached the concierge of the hotel and said, I heard this band is playing in Mexico and I want tickets and I want passes. Make it happen. Shannon then had her office call Eddie's representatives to obtain all of his vital statistics. According to representatives present at the time, she was bothering everyone in the hotel in her failed attempts to meet the singer. He was never interested in Shannon, however, who later dismissed the incident as a simple crush in Us magazine and said that the matter was dropped as soon as she found out that Eddie had a girlfriend he had been dating for 8 years. I didn't try to call up his room or anything. Even if I did, it would make me a very normal girl. The sad part is that he felt like he had to lie and pump up his ego by saying that I did that. I just think he should have been flattered that I even wanted to meet him at the MTV Awards and left it at that. Shannon denounced him in the Us article as tacky for relating his version of the story, although it had to be extracted from Eddie like a bad tooth. I'm not into anybody's shit or anything like that. This is his quote. I don't even worry about little silly things. I didn't even know who this person was. End of excerpt.
Oh, that's it for another episode of Again With This. Next time, and we certainly hope you're sitting down for this information, but it appears that Kelly might have developed an eating disorder.
What?
Right? Elsewhere, The Blaze, ask your parents, will find their reading disordered when Andrea makes the mistake of thinking an editorial on Tragedy McMantis is a viable story idea. David is not precious at all to Curtis Bray. The visual aids for this will have you singing a barfy tune about this episode and every other. You can find them at previously.tv, and you can follow us at previouslyTV on Twitter. I'm Sarah D. Bunting, and I'm at Tomato Nation. My esteemed co-host is Tara Ariano, and she's at Tara Ariano on Twitter. And our fragrant producer, Dave, is on Instagram at Glark. See you next time.
Hi, you know what to do after the beeparoni.
This has been a production of the Previously.tv podcast network.